Hello, it's On This Day. It's John Gibbons. I'm joined by Neil Atkinson and Rob Gutman on this lovely bank holiday Monday. It might be a bank holiday, but the footy never stops. The Anfield Rap never stops, so we're going to bring you three classic games from Liverpool's history. Three really good performances, very different performances, and very different wins. In one case, it's not even a win, but it sends us through. But we're going to start most recently in 2014, which is Liverpool 3, Manchester City 2. So that was on this day 6 years ago. I'm sure you remember the game well. It was a beautiful, sunny day. Liverpool go 2 up after half an hour before being pegged back in the second half by a resurgent City before a brilliant Phil Coutinho winner. Other things of note that happened in the game: Yaya Toure goes off injured on 19. He'd been brilliant that season, and he also misses their draw against Sunderland, which happens after this, but he's rather unfortunately back for the running. Another thing is Kompany doesn't look fit at all, Neil, and they're obviously desperate to get him on the pitch, which is understandable. He makes the mistake for the winner. Now, I don't know how much that's linked to the injury, perhaps not. You know, players can make mistakes sometimes, but he doesn't look right at all, and it just shows that, you know, this was a huge game for both sides, really. You know, it was a massive one. It did feel like a title decider, and that's why we celebrated it so much when we won it.
Yeah, it did. This is when you want to talk about character. We've been talking a lot because it's this time of the season when we've been looking back on what Liverpool sides very rarely got to play title running games against direct opponents, but when they did, they tended to win them. We've talked about the Newcastle 4-3, we've talked about the 4-1 at Old Trafford, and now we've got this one, this 3-2 against Manchester City. And these sides showed, you know, they weren't lacking in courage, and they weren't lacking in quality, because that's why they were up where they were, but they weren't lacking in courage. They could handle a big moment. The issues came away from these games, arguably. And Liverpool are brilliant on the day. I mean, they start so fast. I mean, so fast. And City just do not know where they are. By the time we're actually two up, it really could be 4 or 5. Toure, to me, looked as though I was surprised when you said he missed the next game, because to me, he looked like he went off dizzy. Not the idea that he went off injured. He just looked befuddled. He could not get a kick. And for 30 minutes, City are just not in this game at all. We absolutely marmalised them through until, as I say, until the half an hour mark. Then the game goes a bit dead, and then they play us off the park for the first 20 of the second half, and you get to see what got both sides the points totals that they got over the course of the season, over the course of the game. The other thing is, it's worth saying, City give a really good account of themselves second half. So it is quite something as a football match, as an occasion. It is genuinely one of the great games, and it would actually be looked back on and seen as one of the great Premier League games if either City win it 3-2 and then go on and win the title, or if we win it, as we do, and then go on and win the title. It's one of those things, really, where the football match doesn't quite do what the league table doesn't quite do what the football match needs it to do in terms of having this sort of repute way beyond just 90 minutes of football.
Yeah, can you allow yourself to enjoy this game now, Rob? I mean, I think it's on Sky Sports tonight at 6 o'clock in its entirety. I was on an hour about doing a hot mic on it, actually, or indeed watching it, and I was like, can you just enjoy it purely for what it was, which was a brilliant Liverpool performance on a lovely day, and we came out feeling amazing? Or is what come next too tough? Because to be honest, I was reading the match reports, as a bit of research on this, and I found it quite harder reading than I expected to.
I found that whole season tough, really. I mean, because it was so cruel at the end, because we were so great for the main part, well, certainly for the second half of that season, it was just so wonderful. I mean, even more so than with the current side, I was putting the matches on again and again and watching them over and over again, enjoying the season, really relishing every, savouring every win. So no, I can't watch it back. No, I do. I mean, my memories are still vivid. I mean, that was the day we won the league, as far as I was concerned. I'd rather we just froze time there. I don't wish we had a coronavirus. You know what I mean? I wish that was the defining moment, and that we ended just right there. Because it was sort of the pinnacle of the run, and where, you know, and what we've been working towards on that run. And it was such an incredible football match. As Neil said, there were two, each side had those two phases where they were just outrageous. It was like two great boxers punched each other out, and then you waited, does one have one last blow in them? And thank Christ it was us. And I was away on holiday when that game happened. A terrible, famous timing, and was in a bar with my two boys, and it was a big let off in that bar, just the three of us. I can tell you, I've never known a, you know, it's one of my greatest moments of joy in football ever. That goal, can't imagine what the ground was like that day. Well, I can because I've seen the pictures and I've been in that ground many a time. But but no, I won't be watching it back, I assure you.
There's a really good picture which does make me sad of Rodgers on the pitch after the goal, John, which is just after the Coutinho goal, where he's just, his whole body, he's like, he's on his tiptoes, but he's sort of down on his haunches, and he's celebrating, and it's all this thing. He's leapt onto the pitch, and I think the photographer's caught him as he's landed, and he's just there, and it really is that sort of, that feeling that, you know, it had come together. You know, for me, that's the image that sort of defines the feeling of this is, we're going to do this, almost as much as what happens post-match, if not more in that sense, because it really was that sort of, you know, we're getting there thing that was just absolutely phenomenal, and this sort of feeling that Brendan was riding the rapids at this point, and that was his sort of, because there's very few images I can remember of Rodgers that season in general. Like there's a lot of stuff he does brilliantly, don't get me wrong, but sort of composing him in amongst that football side in a visual sense is really, really tough. But that moment where you can see the players off into the distance and Rodgers just on the pitch celebrating, and it very much reminded me of some early Ferguson and Brian Kidd footage that you used to get to see from the early 90s of them ending up on the pitch, and just that idea that you're so unbridled as a manager at that point. You know, it's like in the way in which the Origi, what part of the thing with the Origi goal against Everton last season and its importance is Klopp ending up going to Alisson. You know, and I think that it's quite rare that season that there is a couple of those moments with Brendan Rodgers. I know Sturridge goes to him early on, but on the whole, you sort of, you know, the players were the players. Not dissimilar to the way Klopp is now, I suppose, in a few senses. The players were the players, and they were doing it. But that one grabs me, and when I see that one, I am always deeply, deeply sad and simultaneously very, very happy that it happened.
Do you know what's interesting about Brendan in that run? And I've never really reflected on it since, but it occurred to me at the time. It's interesting you say he proper lost it in that moment. He was generally very composed during that run. And I remember thinking, Brendan, you're doing well here, but I know you're faking this, but good for you. Because he was a man who was winning a lottery, quite frankly, in a certain sense. Not that he didn't deserve it, not that he wasn't doing brilliantly, but we'd gone being from this team that finished, what, seventh the previous year. You know, we'd come from no... You know, we weren't exactly Leicester heading towards the title that year, but no one should forget that there was a hope in hell that we were going to win that league on August the 10th or whenever that season started. No one was talking about Liverpool. We found that. Sorry? Steve Graves. All right, that guy. But
it's important to point it out, but go on. Colo Torre and Steve Graves.
Fair enough, those two guys. But odds-wise, the odds you would have got at the beginning of the season on Liverpool title would have been very, very long indeed. And for us to find ourselves there was not something Brendan, I don't think, had legislated for. And he was just trying to keep composed about it. He's trying to make it look like this was always part of the plan. Anyway, that's the impression I formed of him. And I was full of admiration for him keeping cool in those very, very febrile circumstances. But obviously, that City game, that was the goal that won the league that didn't. So fair play to him.
It moves us 7 points clear to City, Neil, but there's these two games in hand that City have that sort of constantly, you know, skew it, really constantly skew the table. You know, when that table's thrown up every now and again by people who don't like Liverpool on social media after the Norwich game, which is like, look at this lead that they had. You know, there's always these kind of two games in hand. In fact, you know, one of them does get played till the very last week of the season. And you know, if they obviously win those two games after this game, it's Liverpool, then City one behind them, then Chelsea actually only one behind them. So there would have been three teams within 2 points of each other. And that's sort of a fair reflection, isn't it, of how close this was. This is the very first time, despite Liverpool's brilliant run to get here, this is the very first time that it goes in Liverpool's hands, but it's still only by a slender margin.
Yeah, it does go into our hands. It's important to remember that it is in our hands, because in seasons gone by, when we've got close at this stage, it hasn't got into our hands. So that's why it does hurt as much as it does that they don't get over the line. The flip side is, though, it can be in your hands. It's an 84. City win it with 86, we get 84. It can be in your hands with a number of games to go, but in a season where that many points are dropped. I think it's a strange game. It's a strange season, this, really, in that it sort of straddles eras in a bit of a funny way, in the same way that I think the Leicester one sort of gets written off because Leicester win it. But, you know, there's a lot of sides who fail to win that league. And then, but the around that sort of time, Chelsea go on a mad run, two seasons when they win it, where they just sort of pull out away from everybody. The City going on mad runs. The fact of the matter is, most seasons, title races had twists and turns. And one of the strange, that when I say it straddles an era, the point about this is that Liverpool went on a run that suggests there will not be any twists and turns, that we're not at home to twists and turns. And because it can be seen in that sort of, in that regard with a number of other seasons on the twists and the turns, or the lack of them, the idea that you just win every game because that's what you do if you want to be champions, well, that does happen, but it doesn't happen as often as it gets sort of pitched as being. So yeah, I think that is a massive part of it. But as I say, it is why it does hurt is that it was in their hands. I'm sure we'll talk on one of these shows about the Chelsea game. One of the things about the Chelsea game is that a draw would have been enough. It would have meant that Liverpool needs to win the last two, but you'd have fancied them to do that. So, you know, I think it is a really difficult one to sort of assess the moment of. And also the other thing that happens is, yes, City drop points in the next one after this, but then they win the last five or even the last six. And, you know, City were more than capable of doing what we have just done to go on a run. And City also scored over 100 goals this season as well. They are an absolute attacking powerhouse too, just like we are. So, you know, I think there is... It's April the 13th today. That's the purpose of this show. But there is still a hell of a long way to go.
Yeah. The other thing, Rob, is the Henderson red card on 90 minutes, you know, doesn't seem that big a deal at the time. You know, it's there's time ticking out and you can play stoppage time with 10 minutes. But, you know, the feeling is it does have a knock-on effect in terms of the next, you know, couple of games. We really shouldn't miss Henderson, you know, that Jordan Henderson that much. He's still a young player and, you know, there should have been other guys who could come in and do a job against Chelsea. But it's such a tight group at that point, isn't it? And he's basically playing with 12 lads. and so it just felt like, you know, we needed everyone, really. We needed everyone who we could rely on. And he isn't missing that Chelsea game, Henderson in particular.
I'm never sure about this. Rodgers has cited it since as that cost us the title, he said, the Henderson. So sending off. It's impossible to know. I'd say two things. One, that was until recent Jordan Henderson, as good a version of Jordan Henderson as there's ever been. He was absolutely sensational in the second part of that season in particular. He was fantastic. A lot of them were fantastic, but I thought that, and as I said, until his hyper-renaissance this season, I thought that was the very best of him. I think we had enough elsewhere to have got over the line in the title. If we'd been mentally set perhaps differently, that's the only hindsightism that I would approach with. I think we could, yes, I think, you know, if there's one big miss, it's Sturridge's fitness in those last three games. I think we could have done it with Sturridge, but without Henderson. I'm not sure we'd have done it with Henderson, but without Sturridge. I don't know. It's a bit churlish to sort of put it in those terms, but I think it's a bit dramatic to say Henderson cost us it as well.
I think it is. I think it is really significant. And I think the reasons why are that is linked into Sturridge's fitness. It's fair to say Gerrard is at times in games running on fumes, and then you take the legs of that midfield out. We did the conversation around the Arsenal 5-1 and a couple of other games around this time, John, we've talked about, and one of the things that I think that you see is how important that different bits of fitness wax and wane during games in the middle of that midfield, whereas Henderson's and Suarez's doesn't. Now, I even think Suarez begins to dip physically across the last few games, and that's why I think one of the reasons why I think Henderson is an enormous miss, because he is doing a lot of people's work for them, which means they're more able to do the good stuff, to do what you want them to be doing, and I do think that disappearing does really, really hurt this Liverpool side in terms of what it's got, in terms of being able to shore things up, and all the sort of obvious bits and pieces. I think it is really, really significant and costly to this team. As I say, I think Rob's right to cite the lack of Sturridge as well. I mean, Sturridge gets back on the pitch against Chelsea and looks an absolute pale imitation because they've got him back on the bench at that stage. So I do think I do think it is worth pointing that out. But I think it is the combination of the two of them in completely different ways that just leave this Liverpool side shorn of a lot of what's powered it since the turn of the year.
I think I also think even if they both had stayed fit, the decisive game is the Mourinho game. That's what it is. We come up against Jose with one intent, and he's many things in his career, but one thing he's been very successful at is blocking, is making any game a dead game. I don't care if he'd been facing vintage Barcelona, he could have got that result that day. It's quite possible. I know on another day he might not have been lucky and they might have lost the game 1-0 or 2-0. But he gives them a platform when he wants to. Well, at his best, Mourinho could, and he did that day. Chelsea also managed to motivate them superbly by the fact that they were just guests at our party. So I think a lot that happened that day was a lot about them. We don't want to give them credit for that, but I think a huge amount of it was about them. I also think we were a team that was bound to run out of steam, and it was the wrong fixture at the wrong time for us. Let's put it like that. I think, look, it's a cocktail of factors, isn't it? We're always looking for what was the one sliding doors moment, but I'm not sure. I'm never sure there is one you can pick on in this instance.
Okay. The game is on Sky. If you can face it later, it might be an interesting one to watch back in full, just to see how good these two teams were and what a good game it was. The huddle after the game, the famous huddle now with Steven Gerrard leading it, we go again, and all that is an iconic image. In fact, it ends up on a book of the season, but it's a reminder of what that team did and how close they came and how well it was led at that point by a captain who's had a little bit of a stick on this days for a little bit, but I think his leadership, certainly for me that season, was absolutely spot on. Okay, we'll move on to 2005, and it's Juventus 0, Liverpool 0. It's the second leg of the quarter final. A draw is enough to send us through to the Champions League semi final. That Juve team is so strong. I was looking at the names, they're all superstars. Basically, they win the league that year by 7 points from AC Milan that season, and we know how strong that Milan team was because we played against them as well, and we saw all the superstars that they had too. It's a Liverpool without Gerrard, but Alonso does return after 3 months, and also Djibril Cisse's back. He's on the bench, but gets 15 right at the end, and that's his first minutes since breaking his leg. It was obviously very hostile for players and supporters who travelled. It's the first time we've gone there since Heysel, and there's a home video which is mad on YouTube. It's basically a Juventus fan who looks like he's gone the ground with his camcorder and has made this little 10-minute video of it. I tweeted it last night. It's worth having a look, just because you don't often see games kind of recorded in that manner, really. It feels like you're doing something illegal. But also, you can see the missiles and fireworks that are going into the Liverpool end. You can see the stewards taking a very sort of laissez-faire attitude to it all. There's banners about Hillsborough. There's all sorts. It was always going to be hostile, I guess, Rob, wasn't it? It was 20 years after Heysel, but the first time we'd gone back, and it was always going to be tough. It was always going to be a tough game, sort of on and off the pitch. But the players deserve great credit for coming through it, and actually to limit Juventus to very little.
Yeah, I think Benitez was successful in shutting out the background noise around the tie, actually. And that by the end of the game, that was largely forgotten, that it had that billing that you've given it, John. And in a way, that's overwhelmed the narrative, and I'm glad it did in hindsight. It's one of Rafa's finest moments, I think, in management. But, that's not to diminish anything that went on. The players on the pitch obviously had to put in the performance. The Alonso selection is sort of... is the inspired one, and the Alonso, the performance he gets out of Xabi. I've got a feeling, and I hope my memory's not tricking me, that he leaves. Xabi's all but ready to play at the weekend, and he makes a decision not to play him or even to include him on the bench. He decides he wants to take absolutely no chance. I think he thinks he's only going to get 60 or 70 out of Xabi before he possibly breaks down or some sort of fatigue sets in, and that he is going to have every last bit of a battery pup that Xabi has. and he's the fulcrum of which the performance is built. I mean, like all these things, even like the great win over Chelsea at Anfield later that season, there are a couple of moments, and they think they come early on, where you go, Jesus Christ, but for the grace of God goes the history on this one, in hindsight. There's the one where I think it comes across the box and Ibrahimovic slides in but doesn't make a connection. That's the one that sticks in my mind. I did think in that first 5 minutes we were going to be in for a long, long night, but actually it was a bit of a false dawn for Juve, and they didn't truly pin us in as much as they might have done, I don't think, after then. Am I right in that, in recalling it that way, Neil?
You're absolutely right, Rob. I think it's one of the last great classic European away performances from any Liverpool side. I think it is one of the... It's benchmark stuff, to be honest with you, in terms of how to do it and how to do it in a really interesting way, and to leave them guessing. You know, he starts one shape for the first 10 or first 5 or first 10. It's actually when we concede the chance, and then he changes the shape, which is something he used to like to do occasionally in European games, set up one way and then change it after 5. Liverpool knew what was going on, and therefore Juventus didn't. And then from there, you know, if anything, Liverpool should score more than Juventus. They get that early opportunity. There's some other times where we get penned in. But what Liverpool do really, really well is not let Juventus around the penalty area. There's not actually all that much last-ditch defending that Hippier or Carragher have to do at any point during the game. They are very, very good at just keeping the ball away, running it away, looking after it really, really well. When we got it, Alonso was obviously integral in that, but it's a tremendous performance from Alonso under the circumstances as well. And it's the sort of European away performance that you actually don't get all that many of anymore, the side that's just vanquished us this season. There'll be people who will praise their performance at Anfield, but they did need to score the goals, and they weren't able to keep us out over the course of the game, if you see what I mean. Part of why they get away with it is because they ride the luck and we gift them it. Well, other than the first 5 minutes, as Rob points out, Liverpool don't really ride the luck against Juventus. They are just keeping Juventus in a position where they're not luck's not coming into it. It is a tremendous performance, and it is worth pointing out the quality of that side with players like Zambrotta, Thuram, Emerson, Nedved, Del Piero and Ibrahimovic. You know, that's a serious, serious football team that we come up against. And as Rob points out, other than the first 5 minutes, whilst it's nervy and it was very much one if you were at home to watch behind a cushion, they don't actually hurt us. They really don't actually hurt us very much at all.
Yeah, on the sort of home video on YouTube, you can hear the Liverpool fans singing for Rafa Benitez as Liverpool close it out. And, you know, it was around this time, Rob, that we were really just starting to see what Rafa was about. Obviously, the league form had been up and down this season. There was, you know, some disappointing ones, a lot of defeats away from home in the league in particular. But in Europe, we were seeing, you know, exactly what this man was about. And, you know, this was taking us through to the semi-final, which, you know, Liverpool, you know, hadn't been in, you know, since 85. And so it was a feeling amongst us of, you know, return to the good old days, if you like, and we could see exactly what this fellow was going to do.
Yeah, I think it became clear early on in that campaign under Rafa that he wasn't just going to be able to turn us from the team that was really flagging in Julio's last year into a super team overnight, and that this was a transition season, and that he had a pass of sorts on it. And I think the atmosphere was right in the support, in as much as we took each good result as a green shoot moment. I think more often than not, like when we turn around at Fulham, I'm thinking about, I think, is it the win over Arsenal? We would think those sort of things were taken as really important markers for the future, and the more disappointing results were ignored. But no one was getting carried. There was nothing really to get terribly excited about until we suddenly found ourselves in the European Cup quarterfinal. I remember sort of scratching my head, you know, after the first leg, actually going, fucking hell, we're in a European Cup quarterfinal. We've just beaten this incredible Juventus team 2-1. I mean, we'll probably go out, but wow, can't believe the journey we've been on, really. Because we, you know, felt like a long time since 2002, which in turn had felt a long time since, I don't know when were the European Cup, 1985, actually. So to sort of be back towards sort of the terrain, the country that we felt was our birthright, sort of from nowhere, was really, really weird. And I felt the ecstasy I personally felt, I suppose we all felt at the end of that game in Turin, was a very, very strange feeling. Just how the dawning of how significant, how important what had been accomplished there, you know, dawned on us, I suppose.
Yeah, if you have a little look on my Twitter, there's quite a few replies of people who did go. I didn't go out to Juventus, but there's quite a few replies of people who, and their experiences. It's an interesting one. Very different, obviously, to a normal European way where you know, you fill squares and spend a lot of money behind very grateful bars. For this one, I think everyone was bussed out to something resembling a castle in the mountains all afternoon. Promised kind of you know, your food and beverages there. I think one small can of lager each was all that was and then a bit of risotto was all that was kind of provided, and then kind of bust into the ground. A very sort of, you know, strange experience, but Liverpool came through it, and obviously Liverpool came through with the results that sent them through to the Champions League semi-final. But there'll be plenty more from 2005, of course, in this to come. Just want to move on to the very last game now. It's the third one. It's deemed one of the great Liverpool performances, and I'm really glad we've got Rob on to talk about it. I'm a little bit young to remember it live, but I do remember having the video in ours, which I wore out like every Liverpool video I had. It was heavily featured in the Team of the 80s one, which is the classic VHS of the era, if you ask me. But there was also a season so far video that from 87-88 that comes out after this game. There is every game in the run up to this, and then extended highlights of the 88, and that was a good one as well. Liverpool are top of the league going into this game, but it is worth pointing out the Forest finished third that season, so they are good. It also made me laugh that there was 21 teams in the league that year. Basically, they went from 22 to 20 over two seasons, which must have been a bit mad in itself, Rob. Did you not? It's probably one of those strange things that sort of disappears, but it must have played havoc with games in hand.
There was a frequent period of changes. There was, you said, 20, 21, 22. I don't even remember what the rationale for it was or why they were so charged or, you know, I don't know. It was weird. That game was a midweek evening. Obviously, it was an evening game. As you're right about the VHS, actually. I think this was the last reason people actually physically hung on to their VHS players just so that they could play that fucking tape back. Yeah, it's strange. I mean, there was no sense of pressure going into the game because the league was very much won. It was a season, there's some parallels to this season in sort of just how magisterial Liverpool are and how the sense that the league was won a long time before this. I suppose it would be sort of, I mean, let's notwithstand what's happened here. If the current season had proceeded as we'd hoped it would, I would have liked there to have been, and maybe there will be in some context, whatever, a performance like this. It actually felt that the season needed that performance back in 88 to sort of put a top hat on it, if you like, because Liverpool had won it so comprehensively, even by January, as they had in this one, that they'd suffered a couple of defeats in the previous, I don't know, 6 weeks, 1-0 to Everton and Nottingham Forest themselves, actually. So there was this sense that it would be nice to put a top hat on it, but nobody saw that performance coming. It sort of felt like why tonight? What? But it was unbelievable. And we were two up at halftime. Forest felt like they were always in the game. They were really, really vibrant and positive. They weren't poor at the back. It was as good a performance from a team beaten 5-0 as you could hope to see. And people have said that, and you think, are you just sort of blowing smoke up Liverpool's ass by saying that? But no, I think that's one of the reasons people started to eulogise about the Liverpool performance was just how good Forest were as opponents on the night.
It is worth pointing out there's a lot of fours from this Liverpool side in the run up to New Year's Day. They put four past Coventry on New Year's Day, and then they only in the league put four past one other side before this game. So this is the 13th of April. So from effectively the 2nd of January, as it were, there's only Watford in the league. They put four past. They do go to Main Road and spank City, but there's nowhere else does it happen. And it did feel a little bit, as Rob says, I think there is something in. It needed the crowning glory, and I think that the fact that this Forest side had beaten them less than 10 days, 12 days before, to then do this to that side, I think it tells the story of exactly what this Liverpool side was and how phenomenal they were. And it is it's genuinely, like, I watched the same DVD, the same video into the ground as you, John. But I also remember, like, on the night, people go, oh, we put 4:05 here. And it was major, to be quite honest with you. And I think it's, you know, we've just played them in the FA Cup in the semi-final and beaten them 2-1 in that as well. So we knew that they were very, very good opponents. To do what we do to them and to play the way in which we play, it is football from the future that no one can live with or cope with. And it is beyond sort of most sides as... there's no one else. There's arguably no other team in the world who can do what we do to Forest on the night at this point. Possibly AC Milan of the same period, but there's no other team in the world who can do what we do, and we do it with such quality and intensity. And every single goal is phenomenal.
Yeah, I just want to read out a couple of quotes. The first one's a bit of a long one, so bear with me, but I think it's worth it. It's from Alan Green, who must be a young Alan Green at this point. He is working for the BBC. This is on the night. This was his report that he did for the World Service, I think it was. He said, "That was simply the best display of an exceptional season from Liverpool. Reporters are often accused, rightly, of being too glib or using words like brilliant, fantastic, fabulous. Liverpool deserved all these adjectives tonight. They were, after all, playing a quality side that had beaten them in the league just 11 days ago. They were 2 up at half-time through Hammond and Aldridge. They also hit the woodwork twice, and Sutton had made 3 tremendous saves. Following half-time, you thought it couldn't be as good. It was better. Another 3 goals from Gillespie, Beardsley and Aldridge against Spice with many memorable moves. Everton have now mathematically relinquished their title. Given Liverpool's goal difference, a point next week at Norwich will make them champions." And a short quote from Tom Finney, who's one of the England greats, who was in the crowd that day, and he said, "It was the finest exhibition I've seen the whole time I've played and watched the game. You couldn't see it better than anywhere, not even in Brazil. The moves they put together were fantastic." And it was that interplay that was so eye-catching for me, kind of watching it back, you know, even all these years later, Rob. I've put in my notes here that all the goals are my favourite goal, which is when you watch them, you're like, right, no, that one's my favourite. It's like choosing between, I don't know, brilliant songs on a classic album, almost, you know, the moves that they score. I still can't decide which one is my favourite. It's probably the fourth, because John Barnes is brilliant on it, and he's my fave. But you know, there's so many of them are great.
Is the fourth the cutback for Beardsley by Barnes?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, what a goal. Yeah, it's just about my favourite goal of that era, really, because it's those two in perfect harmony. It always slightly irked me that it's regarded as the John Barnes era. Was for me, Barnes at his best was at his best because Beardsley was his best as well. It's an inseparable, truly inseparable combination, really, to my mind. And I know Barnes went on to have a much longer Liverpool career than Beardsley, although Beardsley had a stunning career after Liverpool as well, in a way. But they were both brilliant on the night. Barnes doesn't score on the night, but it's possibly one of his best performances in a Liverpool shirt. It's also possibly one of Beardsley's best performances in a Liverpool shirt. I could also add Ray Houghton to that number, whose movement and running was incredible on the night. And John Aldridge, bless him, looked like he'd won a competition to play for Liverpool and get to score goals. John Aldridge was very good, but Jesus Christ, it was the easiest job a striker has ever had. He might even have admitted himself with a pint in him, John, as well, that he's ever had in any given season, given what Barnes and Beardsley were literally putting it on plates for that lad.
Yeah, it's funny as well, Neil, because 13-14, people say, when we beat Arsenal 5-1 and there's the Suarez one that hits the post. It says, people joke, what's your favourite goal of that season? Suarez against Arsenal, you know, hits the post. And in the same way, the one that Peter Beardsley hits the bar after slaloming through about 10-15 players is just unreal.
It is phenomenal. And I was going to say, one of the things about it, it's mentioned in the Alan Green thing, is that you can genuinely come away from the game and make an argument that Steve Sutton's got a man of the match out. And we've won 5-0, and Liverpool have been phenomenal, and Steve Sutton has got a genuine man of the match shout, because he makes save after save after save that are just, you know, stuff that is in the corner. He's tremendous throughout, Sutton, but Liverpool are that good that it really is, you know, there's a universe where it's 12 and it's just 12 and everyone's just got a cop for the fact that it's 12. Because the saves he's pulling out the bag are just terrific. The movement that Liverpool are demonstrating is second to none. The one that you've cited there, you know, they hit the woodwork 3 or 4 times during the game, and that's one of them where he just, Beardsley just both shows unbelievable quality but unreal aggression. And actually, it's interesting that you mentioned Suarez, because it's very, you know, it's very Suarez-esque. That one, in that it is, it's a combination of footballing brilliance, but also the fact that he will not be stopped by anything at that point. His hips are swiveling as he's going right the way through, and players are bouncing off him, and everything that they're doing is last ditch. They're hanging on for dear life. It's tremendous, and he is brilliant on the night. Beardsley, I mean, he was brilliant across much of that season. Once he settles, I think it just takes him a little bit longer to settle than it does a couple of the others. But then he's terrific at bringing Barnes into the game as well, and I think that that's a massive thing. You can talk up lots of aspects of this side and the individuals, and rightly so, but it's a phenomenal piece of team building from Kenny Dalglish, a man who understood how a football team needed to operate. And there's the Paisley quote going back to in the early 80s, talking about what Kenny was really good at. And one of the things he says is he's just brilliant at bringing people into the game. And what the team he builds here is brilliant at all the time is bringing one another into the game. That was the sheer phenomenal nature of them. When people often say, you know, is it a team built in a manager's image? And this one really is, because it's very certain, but also because every single player knows how to get the best out of every other player that they play with and play around. Whelan and McMahon in the middle of the park, Beardsley bringing people in all over the place, Nicol being able to support Barnes brilliantly. You know, these lads could all bring the best out of one another almost every time they stepped onto the pitch. And I think that that's a real skill, and it's actually a real rarity, where you're able to look at an 11 and feel like everyone's able to play their 8, 9, 10 out of 10 game, whatever that personally. And Aldridge is a really good example of it. They get the very best that you can out of Aldridge, because they keep putting it on a plate for him, and that's what he eats up. And so all of this is everyone gets the very best out of everyone else, and that is genuinely rare in a football team.
And just before we go, Rob, where does this team and this night sort of fit in for you in terms of, you know, your time watching Liverpool? It's often discussed as the greatest performance, and this side, the 87-88 side, is often talked of as the not quite the definitive one, but certainly the best to watch. I don't know how you look back at this era in terms of, you know, everything you have seen.
The one great caveat you have to put before when you want to analyse that 87-88 team is that Liverpool were banned from Europe, and you never got to see them matched up at that elite level. So they exist in a sort of parallel universe. And within that parallel universe, they remain, I think, on balance, the greatest Liverpool team there's ever been. They certainly were the best looking Liverpool team in terms of at their best. I mean, I don't mean in terms of the way they played football. When it came together, and it did enormous amount of times, it did consistently come together. They played football. I remember, this is 88, so I've been watching Liverpool properly for 10 years at that point. And I'd seen us win European Cups and be at the top of world football, effectively. But this was the first time. I remember talking to my mate who I went to match with a lot, Julio, you know, both know him. I found yourself properly almost making noises, like in appreciation, like purring, not purring. But, oh, I never thought myself doing that. Oh, what's he doing? You know, if you watch that Barnes goal back, the Beardsley goal back to that, you watch that goal, and you'll do that instinctively. You can't help yourself. Funnily enough, you know, I next caught myself doing that was in the second half of the 13-14 season. Yeah. Because some of the football played then was genuinely comparable, I think, to the 87-88 team. You can't say it was comparable back to front, but middle to front it was comparable. With the current side, yes, too, as well. I mean, you know, I think in the Kiev season, which is that now, losing track around the 17-18 season, the second part of that season, some of the football there is comparable to the 87-88. But in terms of being able to put it together week in, week out, I think it's sort of peerless, the 87-88 team. Again, with the caveat that it wasn't tested at the top of European football.
Fantastic performance from a fantastic team, and that does round up on this day for another day. I hope you've enjoyed it. We'll be here all week like a comedian in Benidorm, here to bring you a bit of nostalgia and obviously a bit of classic football games, as normally this is the time when the league gets very exciting, and we've got some brilliant stuff coming up, not least tomorrow, 4-3 against Dortmund to whet your appetites, doing it on Hotmaker as well. But in the meantime, thanks to Neil and thanks to Robin, that's been on this day for another day.